we have a principle of mitzvah bo yoseh mibishlucha. It's always better for you to do something than to give it over to someone else. Why? What is the reason for this principle? So Rashi in the Gemara, I'm not sure where the Gemara is, writes, it's to show the chavivus of the mitzvah. When you do something yourself, you express the love, the preciousness of the mitzvah. Other mefarshim don't say that. Other rishonim say the reason why it's better you do the mitzvah more than giving over to an agent is just to make sure it gets done. If you give something over to an agent, you really do not know if the agent will carry out the mitzvah. If you want something to get done, do it yourself. Now, why is this related to this week's parasha? Because in this week's parasha, when Avraham Avinu engaged in the mitzvah achnosas orachim, he divided up the labor between himself, his wife, Yishmael, and an invisible person. He himself went to seek out to find the animals, the meat, the bread, and the cooking. He got his wife Sarai involved. The water was done by an anonymous person. Yukach no ma'at mayim v'rachatzu ragleichem. He told an anonymous person to fetch the water. Doesn't say who that person was. And then Yishmael was also involved. Okay, where was Yishmael involved? Let me just get the division of labor. There's a lot of division of labor here in the midst of Achnos Azarchem. Let's see. Yukach no amat mayim v'rachatzu ragleichem v'yishotach tzveitz. V'echof haslechem. So that was done to an anonymous person. Then when it comes to the paslechem, it was done by Avraham. I will take for you the bread. Avraham, then he runs to the tent and he says to him, Ha'ari shloishim kemach seles lushin v'asugos. The El HaBokar rots Avraham. Avraham himself went to get the animals. V'yach ben Bokar. V'yitain El Hanar. And then it says, he gave the bokar to the nar, vayimaher latzois. So who was the nar? Rashi Pasik Zayin. The nar was Zeh Yishmael. L'chanchoi b'mitzvois to b'mechanichim in the mitzvah of hachnos ha'sarchim. So take note, there were four people that participated in preparing for the guests. Avram, he was the supervisor. Not just the supervisor, he was also the one that Vel HaBokor rots Avraham. He went out into the field, into the barn, wherever the animals were, to retrieve the animals. Who was the one who actually slaughtered and prepared and cooked the meat? It appears it was Yishmael, his son. Who was the one that brought the water for them to wash their feet? It was an anonymous person that we have no knowledge, no mention of. And who else was involved in the preparation? Sarai. He told her, please bring the bread, bring shloish se'im kemach soiles lushi v'asi ugois. Now on this story, Chazal tell us, whatever happened here his children were rewarded mida keneged mida. Because Avraham himself went to prepare the meat, and Sarai, she prepared the bread, we were rewarded in the desert where we received man directly from Hashem. Every single day the man came from Shemayim, and the slav came out of heaven. The slav really only came in the beginning for the first 30 days, the slav, but it was provided directly from Hashem, from Shemayim. It came raining down upon the Jewish people, bread and meat. Water? No. Water was given al yidei shaliach. And Chazal tell us this was a punishment, so to speak. Because Avraham himself did not do the mitzvah, instead he appointed an agent to perform the mitzvah. That's why his children were also given water al yidei shaliach through the agency of another object. So the question is, but what about the meat? The meat Avraham appointed Yishmael. And the bread, he asked Sarai. Why
he didn't do it himself either. He didn't do everything himself, so why should there be a difference? So here Chazal learned a very powerful yesod. When it comes to chinuch, your own children and your own wife, what they do for you, what they do to prepare the mitzvah, is considered as if you yourself did the mitzvah. This principle of mitzvah bo yoser mibishlucho only applies when you're asking an outsider to do the mitzvah. You pick up a person in the street, do me a favor, I want you to do this mitzvah on my behalf. I want you, here's money, I want you to go bring the tzedakah to so-and-so and give him the tzedakah. It's a very nice thing to do. No one's come to challenge that, but that also goes up against the principle mitzvah bo yoiser mibishlucha. But if you say to your child, here's money, I want you to give the tzedakah to so-and-so. I want to train you how to give tzedakah. There is no criticism. There is no criticism in training your own children to do the mitzvah. That's not a violation of mitzvah bo yoiser mibishlucha. Likewise, your wife. There's no violation of mitzvah bo yoiser mibishlucha. Why? Because that's the way the world is. A person has a wife. She's part of your team. Children, you have an obligation to mechanich them. And part of the chinuch is that they should do the mitzvahs, even if it means that you're not going to do the mitzvah. That is the division of labor when it comes to mitzvahs. That is a principle that we definitely extract from this section. And this is still up again at odds with Rashi. Because Rashi learns the inyan of doing the mitzvah yourself is to show the chavivas of the mitzvah. If you give the mitzvah over to someone else, it's still not the same. You're still lacking in the actual performance of the mitzvah. Okay, not necessarily if you give an odd with Rashi, but we'll just point out these two yesodis. Why is there a principle of mitzvah yom b'shlucho? Number one, to make sure the mitzvah gets done. There's nothing like doing it yourself. If you're doing it yourself, you know it will get done. If you give it to someone else to do, it's not in my control. Number two, it's more than just the results. It's not just the results that count in Yadus. In Yadus, it's the effort. The effort of doing the mitzvah has an effect on you. It changes your outlook, your perspective. If you do the mitzvah yourself, it's very likely you'll do it again. If you ask someone to do the mitzvah on your behalf, it's not so likely you're going to do it again. Because if you have not invested time and effort in the mitzvah, then the mitzvah is abstract. It's in the intellectual sphere. Who says you'll do it again? We all know that things that we invest time and effort, we become attached to. The more you give, the more connected you are. Doing it yourself is a guarantee you'll do it again. Appointing an agent is almost a guarantee you won't do it again. So there's another element in the principle of mitzvah bo yoseh mibishlucha. How does that intersect with what we just learned here in this parasha, where we have four participants, oneself, one's wife, one's child, and an outsider? Obviously, every situation is unique, but you cannot deny that these are three critical elements in mitzvah bo yoseh mibishlucha, the balance. Make sure it gets done. Show that it's important. Chavivus, the love for the mitzvah, doing it. And number three, if you invest in the mitzvah, you are likely to do it again. And that is usually very, very critical. Now let's discuss some of the other issues in this very, very big sugya. When we say this a principle called mitzvah bo yoseh mibishlucho, does that mean you have to do the entire mitzvah? Or it's enough to participate in part of the mitzvah? Let's take for an example, making a sukkah. Okay, there's a mitzvah to build a sukkah. Does that mean, the mitzvah, that's really the hachon, that's really, it's not such a great example because that's really the preparation, which we'll come to in a few moments. But let's for the moment now look at the idea of building a sukkah. When we say there's a principle, mitzvah bo yoseh mibishlucho,
So you can go down Avenue J or Avenue M and look at the traffic light poles, and there's going to be a flyer, Sukkah Builders, and you'll pull off one of those little tabs on the bottom, and you'll dial the number, and you'll pay some kids. They'll rip you off big time. You'll pay them a couple of bucks. They'll come over to your house, and they'll put up the sukkah for you. Oh, it's going to cost you, I don't know, whatever it costs, $50, $100, whatever they're going to rip you off. All right. The money's not a big deal. I waste a lot of money and a lot of narishkeit, so the money is really no big deal. If you can say that for anybody, okay? So say a very wealthy person, the money is no big deal. Let the kids do it. I don't want to do it. But if I can do it, I'm a healthy person. I have no problem. I go out to the gym. I lift weights. I jog. I bike. Putting up the sukkah is no big deal. I can do it. There's no physical strain on my body for me to build a sukkah. If I can go biking and hiking and work out in the gym, putting up the sukkah is nothing. The money is not an issue. So should I build a sukkah, or should I call up some kid I never saw before and have him come to the house and put up the sukkah? Well, in this situation, it would appear mitzvah boy yoiser mibishluchai. If it's no big deal for you to put up the sukkah, you should do it. Question, but does that mean that I have to do the entire thing? Maybe I, just by taking out, removing from the basement all of the parts of the sukkah, and putting up the basic structure, and maybe putting up maybe 2-3 pieces of schach, I have now done a chelik of this mitzvah. I have built the sukkah. I've done a portion of the mitzvah. Am I now in violation of mitzvah bo yoiser mi b'shluchoi to require if I don't do the entire mitzvah? So many people can say no. In order for you to fulfill the principle of doing the mitzvah yourself, it does not necessarily demand you do the entire mitzvah. You do a portion of the mitzvah. Because by doing a portion of the mitzvah, in essence, you really get all three. Number one, you're guaranteeing that it's getting done because you actually started the process. Once you start the process is underway. Number two, you've shown the chavivus because you've invested, you've done something. And you've also, you'll do it again. You've invested time. You've done something. When you do something, you invest time. So many places can be very lenient in saying that you don't have to do the entire mitzvah. If it bothers you very much, this principle, mitzvah b'yoseh b'shluchai, even doing a portion of the mitzvah is A-OK. Next issue. What happens if it costs a lot of money? It's not cheap to do the mitzvah. I could do it myself, or I could pay someone to do the mitzvah, but it hurts. If I pay the amount of money that is necessary, it hurts. It's a significant expense. So many poskim say that you are not in violation of mitzvah, of violating mitzvah bo yoseh mibishlucho if you have to pay someone to do the mitzvah a significant amount of money. And how do we know this? We know from Kriya Shema. Why does it, if it says b'chol nafshecha, why does it say b'chol miyodecha? Nafshecha is your neshama, and b'chol miyodecha is your wealth. Chazal say because there are people who value their money more than they value their health, their neshama. That's a reality in this world. People, money, cash is king. Okay, they value their money. If they are willing to spend their hard-earned money on having someone do the mitzvah, being that yesh anoshim yesh anoshim, there are people that value money more than their own body, their own health, their own existence, and you spent the money to do the mitzvah, that certainly is a fulfillment of doing the mitzvah yourself. It's not considered you are in violation. Okay, so that's number two. As we mentioned before, children. Your children, the mitzvah of chinuch habonim, trumps mitzvah bo yoseh mebeshlucho. We learn it from Yishmael, from your wife and your children. So already three exceptions. Another exception. Now this is a controversial. This is a very controversial. This is really is not necessarily. Let's say the person that's going to do the mitzvah for you, we'll call them. The term that they use in the Pesukim is the Gadol Hadar. Let me give you. Let's say, for example, you are a mohel. You've been trained. You have been trained to be a mohel. You spent years studying by the best experts, and you do a milah every day. Every day you do a bris milah. And today, you know who's in town? Guess who shows up in town today? The Gadol Hadar. Rav Moshe Feinstein is here. And it happens to be Rav Moshe Feinstein is a mohel. He wasn't a mohel, okay? I'm just making up a story, a make-believe story. The Gadol Hadar is here. And I have a mitzvah. It's my mitzvah to circumcise my child. It's my mitzvah. I can appoint an agent. Most people do appoint an agent. They make the moil. Why? Because I don't know how to do it. I don't know the first thing what to do. Okay, so then you don't have a choice. But here I know how to do it. And I do it all the time. And I'm an expert. But there's someone here today that's very special. The Gadol Hadar. And it's special that the Gadol Hadar should be the one that does the mitzvah for me. Is it considered, what should I do? What do you do? How do you handle the situation? This is a shayla this is a common, like not common, but it's a shayla that's presented. Here I am, I'm a moil, it's my baby, it's my mitzvah. Happen to have, let's say, like my father is also a moil. The Zayd is a moil. It's not his mitzvah, it's my mitzvah. It's my mitzvah to circumcise my, but I only mechabed my father to be the moil. Or when Mechabed, my Rebbe, the Gadol Hadar, there's something to it. This is not an easy question to answer, and there really does not appear there is a good answer to this question. But what do you take away from this? That there's a possibility. Ah, but it's mitzvah bo yoseh mi bishluchai. Exception number 4. When the person that's going to be doing the mitzvah is called, there's a term that they made up, I don't know how they made up this term, It's called the Gadol Hadar. Oh, the Gadol Hadar, let him do the mitzvah instead of you. Now let's do another exception to the rule of mitzvah bo yoseh mi b'shluchai, where it's not the actual mitzvah, but it's the preparation for the mitzvah. Now that's a little complicated. It's a gray area. What this means, the preparation. Theoretically, I'll give you a simple example. Preparing the Dalid Minim. Okay, there are many Choshuva people, very distinguished people, who know a lot about different quality Esrog, how to select a quality lulav, quality hadasim and aravos. So you can take off from work and go to the store, shop around. It'll take you a whole day to go to this one, to that one, to look at his esrogim, these esrogim, and look and see what's available this year and inquire to make the preparations to acquire quality merchandise. So that on the first day of Sukkos, when you will do the mitzvah, you will do the mitzvah in a way that is mechudar. So let's clarify. What is the mitzvah of lulav? The mitzvah is netilas lulav. Asher kedeshanu b'mitzvayse v'tzivanu al netilas lulav. Just like doing the act of circumcision. That's the mitzvah. Asher kedeshanu b'mitzvayse v'tzivanu al hamila. Bris Mila, there are really no preparations. I mean, very, very minor, if any, for Bris Mila that you could consider to be a preparation. Lulav and Esrog, it takes time, okay? To build a sukkah, you know, it takes time. You have to go shopping. And there are a lot of different types of Esrogim. You can buy an Esrog from Kfar Chabad. They have some beautiful Esrogim. Some of the nice Esrogim are Chabad Esrogim. Chabad, from
They have a whole unique yichus, whatever they have. They have very distinct their estrogen. Kfar Chabad, you can buy Chazonish from Eretz Yisrael Chazonish. Then there's an estrogen called Braverman estrogen. And then you can buy, now they have American estrogen from Los Angeles, from Florida. And you can buy from Morocco, from Yanova, Greece, all different types of estrogen, all different, each one has its smiles and chesroinis. It's a lot of work, but it's hachona, it's preparation. Is there a principle of mitzvah boy yoiser mibishluchoy with regard to the preparation? All of this is just a hachana. I don't have time. I have to make money. I want to make money. I want to learn. I want to be involved in other things. Let my child do it. Let my child who's saying, the child who's saying is okay. A child sometimes. A child is better than someone else. I'll tell my assistant. I have an assistant. This guy, anyway he works, I anyway pay him. So he has nothing to do anyway today. So I'll tell him to go out and buy the estrogen. He knows how to find good stuff. Let him do it. He's not getting paid anything special. I'm not paying him. He anyway gets paid. So let him do it for today. He has nothing to do. He'll do this. Is that a violation of mitzvah bo yoyse b'shluchay when it comes to hachana, when it comes to preparation? Part of the mitzvah, that's not the etzem ha-mitzvah, but is the preparation of the mitzvah. So many poskim say no. Then you're allowed, that's not a violation. You can ask without any hesitation someone to make the preparations. The principle of Yosef B'shluchos is only when it comes to the mitzvah itself, not the preparation. But there are two exceptions. There are two major exceptions to this rule, and that is the hachana for Shabbos and the hachana for getting married. Now what do we mean? Because there are many examples cited in the Gemara where various Amoraim would do things to prepare for Shabbos. They would salt fish, they would cook this dish, they would prepare that dish. The Gemara cites a whole long list of examples of different Atanoim, Amoraim, which went out of their way to make preparations for Shabbos. When did they eat the food? They ate the food on Shabbos. So the mitzvah is to be mechabe the Shabbos. The mitzvah l'cho'ora is Shabbos day. It's Shabbos when you eat the food. Ah, now you're eating the food. You got to do it yourself. You can't have someone. You can't have someone do it for you. But the preparations to prepare the food, to clean the house, to do all of the preparations, let someone else do it. Get hired help. Let go to the bakery and buy the challahs. I have to go sweat away and make the challahs myself. Mitzvah bo yoseh mi bishlucho to bake the challahs. Go to the store and buy the challahs in the bakery. Let someone else go and do all the work. I don't have to do the work. Let other people do all the different things. The Gemara says no. The Gemara clearly demonstrates that when it comes to the preparation of Shabbos, the preparation of Shabbos is in a different league. You must do it yourself. And likewise, when it comes to marriage, Osur lo'odom sheikadesh isha ad sheirena. What is the mitzvah of marriage? It's not marriage. It's the results. Children building a bias. So let someone else make all the preparations. Let the shatran find me a girl. I'll just show up to the wedding. I'll just show up, and whoever you decide should be the kala, I'll marry. Is there such a thing? Absolutely not. It is also. It is also for a person. Could you imagine such a thing? A boy says to a shatran, listen, I want to get married. I don't know what's good, what's not good. I am just going to book a hall. I'm going to go rent an apartment. I'm getting married. And you are the shatran. I trust you. I have faith in you. You send a girl that night to the wedding hall. Whoever marches down the aisle, that's who I'm going to marry. Is that a milah or a chesaron? Well, many people will tell you it's a very big milah, but Chazal seem to say that it's not a good idea. Osur Lo la'adam sheyikadish isha at sheyirena. You must make the hachonis. Obviously, because it may be a disaster. So these are two exceptions to the rule. There are two notable exceptions to hachonis, which are hachonis for marriage and hachonis for Shabbos, where we do apply the principle mitzvah bo yoiser mi bishlucho. But when it comes to other mitzvahs, we do not apply that principle. And then there is grounds to say that there is no requirement, not necessarily for you to do the mitzvah yourself, but instead you can let someone else make the preparation. So halacha lemaisa, this is sugya in itself. What have we learned over here? Let's review a little bit. We learned over here three reasons for this principle called mitzvah bo yoiser mi bishlucha. It comes from this week's parasha. This week's parasha is the poster child. It's beyond question the poster child for mitzvah bo yoiser mi bishlucha. Rabbi Avinu is engaged in achnasas orchim. He seeks the help of three people. Together with him, there are four people: himself, his wife, Yishmol, and an anonymous person getting the water. The Chazal tell us because of this anonymous person, his children were punished, but they did not receive the water directly from Hashem. They received the water indirectly. And here we learn the principle mitzvah bo yoiser mi bishlucha. We gave three reasons: number one, the chavivas hamitzvah; number two, to guarantee the job gets done; number three, mitzvah bo yoiser is to make sure if you are invested, emotionally involved in the mitzvah, that guarantees that you will repeat the mitzvah a third time. And then we discussed five exceptions. Number one, if you pay someone good money, being that there are people who value their money more than their bodies, paying money means a lot to them. That's an expression of mitzvah bo yoiser mi bishlucha. Exception number two, preparations. Not necessarily are you required to make the preparations. Number three, children. The mitzvah of chinuch and your wife that overrides the concern of mitzvah bo yoiser mi bishlucha. Exception number four, do you have to do the entire mitzvah? Or is it sufficient for you just to do a portion of the mitzvah? And exception number five. Okay, what was exception number five? I forgot exception number five. There was exception number five. What did I say? The Gadol Hadar. The Gadol Hadar shows up, and you want to be mechabe the Gadol Hadar with doing the mitzvah for you, like the case of the Moel. Maybe there we do not apply the principle of mitzvah bo yoiser mi bishlucha. There is an element of respect, of chashivas, to give it over to someone that's even greater, to let them do the mitzvah. Now, I just want to point out two points which in summary, two things just to reflect upon. And that is, I just mentioned that when it comes to doing a mitzvah, chinuch overrides mitzvah bo yoiser mi bishlucha. However, it may be so, but it's not always such a good idea. And the classic example is what all of the Bali Musar tell us, that if you take your child to shul, it's not necessarily a good idea to give the child a quarter and tell them to put the quarter in the pushka. So you'll say, mitzvah bo yoiser mi bishlucha. You know the lumnis, not when it comes to a child. When it comes to a child, you do not say the principle. Although that may be true, but what's going to happen? What is the chinuch that you're giving, you're teaching the child? You're teaching him that you, the father, give the child a quarter. So the child will grow up. When he'll become a father, he will also take out a quarter from his pocket, give it to his child, and tell his child to put the quarter in the pushka. But if the father would take out the quarter from his pocket and in the presence of his child put the quarter in the pushka, that will make a much greater impression upon the child. And when the child will grow up, he'll take out of his pocket, not a quarter, He'll take out a dollar bill. He'll take out a lot of money. My father gave tzedakah. I also want to give tzedakah. So although the principle of mitzvah bo yoyser mi b'shluchu technically does not apply to children, but it's not necessarily considered by the Bali Musa to be the best type of chinuch habanim to tell them to do it. Because if you're going to tell them to do it, the chinuch you're giving them is they also should tell their children to do it, not get involved in the mitzvah itself. That is not necessarily a good thing. Now the other thing we mentioned, well, let's say another thing is mitzvah yosem mishul. This is more of a politics and kavod. Is let us say you are mechabed a person to be the mesader kiddushin. There are many stories where gedolei hadar were given the kavod to be the mesader kiddushin, and they come to the wedding, and who do they see at the wedding? They see another gadol hadar. There were many times when Rav Yosher ben Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, was at a wedding, and Rav Moshe Feinstein was present. And Rav Yosher ben, he deferred. He said, Rav Moshe is here, I want Rav Moshe to be the Mesader Kedusha. And the guest, the Baal Simcha was a bit disappointed, because the Baal Simcha says, but Rebbe, I was mechabed you. If I wanted to be mechabed Rav Moshe, I would have been mechabed Rav Moshe. You're my Rebbe. I want to be mechabed you. Rav Moshe came. He's the Gadol Hador. He's also the Gadol Hador. You're also the Gadol Hador. But Rav Moshe came from a different side, the other than the Mechudin. Rav Yosheva says, would say, I mean, there are all different types of stories like this, and say, that's part of being Mesader Kedushin. You gave me the job to be Mesader. I'm being Mesader by making sure the one who should do, that does it, is the right person. And the right person here is Rav Moshe. Okay, so you have stories like this of what exactly it means, mitzvah b'yosem b'shlucho. Obviously, there are different elements which get into the mix, which makes life very complicated in this manner. Okay, so this is one topic, the topic of mitzvah b'yosem b'shlucho. Now I want to discuss with you another topic. Okay, we'll talk about politics after the shiur is over. I want to talk to you another topic, the topic of midas sedom. This week's parish is very tragic in that Sodom was incinerated. Sodom was obliterated even after Avraham Avinu begged Hashem, don't do it, don't do it, don't destroy them. Ulai, maybe you'll find in the city 50 tzaddikim, if not 50, 45, 40, 30, 20, 10. Don't do it. And Hashem said, I'm sorry. The time has come. This city must go. They must be destroyed. And Kachava, and it's only in the merit of Avraham Avinu's tefillos that Lot and his daughters were spared. Now, Sodom, there's a lot to talk about Sodom. We'll talk about something called Midas Sodom. Before we talk about Midas Sodom, we have something very critical to appreciate. Sodom in Parashas Vayera represents the third time the Ribbono Shel Olam, at least in the Psukim, at least openly, brought to this world a Churban. The third time. The first Churban Hashem brought to this world was the Mabel. Ki Hishchis Kol Basar Darkoi Al Haaretz. The second Churban was Migdal Bavel, Dor HaFlaga. Dor HaFlaga, they all got together, they rose up to rebel against Hashem, to build a Migdal, to rise up and fight against Hashem, whatever all that means. And Hashem responded. Hashem brought upon them a Churban. What was the Churban? Dispersal. They were scattered. They were scattered to the four corners of the earth, which is not a good thing. Okay, it, to be together, obviously, coming together, obviously, strength is in numbers. When you're together, not when you're scattered throughout the world. It's considered to be a Churban, terrible Churban, what happened to the people of Bavel. And the third time Hashem destroyed the world was, brought about a Churban in the world was Sodom. Sodom and her suburbs, four other cities, Sodom and three other cities, the fifth one was not destroyed, at least not immediately. was destroyed. What's the difference between the three Churbanos? The very fundamental differences between the three Churbanos. Noach's generation was destroyed. Why were they destroyed? Ki hishris kol basar darkoi al haaretz. Each kolbas, the entire world was corrupt. What was the corruption? Gezel. Okay, lo nechtam gezardinam ela al hagozel. Ki hishchis kolbosar dakar al aretz, vayom Hashem shalom noyach, keitz kolbosar bo lefanai ki molo ha aretz chomos. Rashi, gezel, lo nechtam gezardinam ela al hagozel. So what happened? Why did Hashem destroy the generation of Noach? People took what did not belong to them. There is ownership in this world. There is private property. You don't take what does not belong to you. If you take what does not belong to you, you get punished. Okay, that doesn't include gezel, it includes the whole way of life. Women, here's just called arayos. You're not entitled to live with someone else's wife. Ki hishchis kol basar darkei al aretz. It's all an extension of gezel. There is private ownership. There are boundaries. Don't trespass. Do not take away don't take what does not belong to you. Period. And if the world has reached a situation, has reached a level where people don't understand that, and there are no boundaries, and everyone just takes from everyone else, there's no private ownership, the world is over. It's the end of the world. Okay, that's one type of Churban. There's another Churban, the Churban of the Dor HaFlog. What happened there? There was private ownership. No one stole. No one took away. Everyone learned their lesson. No one took what's not theirs. What's yours is yours. What's mine is mine. No problem. What was the problem? They rebelled against God. They said, Ribbono shel Olam, maybe you created the world, maybe you didn't create the world. Whatever it is, we don't want to know from you. Get lost. They rebelled against God. Hashem says, excuse me. I'm the Baal HaBos. Who pays the bills here? This is my house. This is my world. Don't make trouble. You want to make trouble? Get out of here. It's my world. You're building a tower to go rebel against me, to go rise up and fight against me, whatever all this means. It was a rebellion against God. There was no issues of theft. Doesn't say anywhere that in the time of Migdal Bavel, people were stealing from one another, and there was a breakdown of society where the principle of private ownership dissolved. That didn't happen. People maintained, they believed in private ownership. They exercised their right to own things privately. No one took from one another, but it was a rebellion against God. Hashem says, this cannot go on. There must be a churban. Now here comes the question. What then is the chait of Sodom? How does this third churban of Sodom differentiate itself from the other two churbanos? And this is a very critical principle. It is probably more critical today than it ever was. The people of Sodom, it says they were chatoim v'ram laHashem. They rebelled against Hashem. It's true. They rebelled. They were evil people. But Chazal tell us, Hashem says, Er dino v'ere, hakitza'akoso haboho elai. Oh, I've got the exact words. Let me go down into this world, make an investigation to see if the cry that is coming to me is true or not. And if it's true, you're finished. And what was the cry? What was the chait, unique chait of the Dor of Sodom? There was a law in the land. You're not allowed to feed the poor. Anyone who is poor has no one to blame than himself. It's his fault, whatever that means. And therefore, they're a burden upon society, the poor people. Let them starve to death and rot. And no one is to come along out of the goodness of their heart and feed them and support them. And there was a young girl who happened to be the daughter of Lot that had mercy upon a homeless man in the subway, the Q train. And when she went to work, she threw him a banana. She threw him a cucumber. She gave him some of her leftover bagels, from some leftover Mishulach Manos. She gave him a few dollars, and he survived. He lived. And the people of Sodom could not understand, how is this poor man still alive after all this time? Al derech hatev, you can't live more than a couple of days without food. And this guy, he's going nowhere. Somebody must be feeding him. They took out the tapes, the videotapes, the cameras, and lo and behold, they discovered who was feeding this fellow, the daughter of Lot. They put her on trial, and they executed her in the most gruesome way. I think it says they smeared her body with honey, and the bees came, and they bit her, and they ate her up alive. They murdered her in the most gruesome way. What was her crime? Her crime was she gave tzedakah. Now let's understand. What was the chait? The people of Sodom, they were not accountable. They were not guilty of rebelling against Hashem. We're not focusing on that. Even though it says they did, but we're not focusing on that. When they didn't steal one penny. Nobody took a penny from his fellow man. So they're not guilty of Hamas. What are they guilty of? They're guilty of not willing to tolerate another person do chesed with somebody else. In other words, mind your own business. If you want to create a society where there are no social programs, that's okay. That's okay. Hashem said, if you want to create such a society, there's no social security, there's no welfare, there are no food stamps, there's no WIC, there's no Section 8. You want to create a society, there's no lunch programs, no Pell Grants, there is nothing. If you want to create such a society with no Democrats and don't give any gift to a poor person, it's fine. Hashem says, I can live with that. What's going to happen to all the poor people who don't have unemployment and Social Security and Section 8 and food stamps and lunch programs and Pell Grants? What's going to happen to them? I don't know. They'll starve. They'll die. They'll fade away into society. Okay. Hashem says, I'm not going to touch you. You deal with the problem. I'm not going to incinerate you. I'm not going to nuke you. But if you do create such a society and there happens to be a nice guy out there that on his own, at his own personal expense, decides to give scholarships for poor children that should be able to go to school. No government money. This is not government. There's no redistribution of the wealth. There is no government money. Private citizens, the private sector has decided, I see there are poor people, I want to help them. I want to give them some charity. And the government gets involved. And the government says, no, we don't want to let you give someone else charity. We don't like that. And we're not going to let you. That is Sodom. They had a unique flavor of chait. Their chait was not stealing. It was not rape, violence, all these ugly words. No, they were clean from that. It wasn't their atheism, their false beliefs, paganism, atheism, all these false forms, the ideology of Avodah Zarah. No, that's not the problem. The problem is, mind your own business. If Reuven wants to give tzedakah to Shimon out of the goodness of his heart, and you watch that, and in your eyes that's evil, And you want to prevent Reuven giving money to Shimon? That is wicked. Wicked. You're a wicked person. No one's asking you for charity. No one's taking out of you one dime. No one's bothering you. He wants to give charity. Let him give charity. Mind your own business. How does that affect you? You're so concerned it's going to trickle down and affect the whole society. If the private sector wants to do chesed, mind your own business. When people start getting involved and become vicious and can't tolerate someone else give tzedakah, this is the unique flavor of Sodom. So Sach HaKol, it's very worthy to appreciate that in this world, there are three types of sins. There are three, that's all there is. When you want to look at the world coming to the end, the apocalypse, you want to make a horror movie, the apocalypse, the world's coming to an end. There are three ways to bring the world to an end. There are three buttons you can press to bring the world to an end. Button number A is steal. Break down society in such a way where no one has privacy. No privacy. There's no self. Whatever you have, someone can steal. You want to call that socialism? I don't know what you want to call it. Someone can just take away whatever you have. That's a churban. That was Noach's generation. There's another churban. People want to rebel against God. They have a hatred, Rahman al-Islam, for religion. They want to rebel. That's another way to destroy the world. A third way to destroy the world is intolerance of other people. Where you see other people engage in noble activities and you, for no reason, or you have convoluted reasons, no, you can't be a good person. We don't want you to do kindness. That is the third way you guarantee the world will come to an end. If you want to extrapolate into society, I'll just give you an abizrayu. This is a very famous story, an abizrayu. Abizrayu of Midas Sodom. During the Var Hatzalah, during the Holocaust, when it was discovered, the American Jewry became aware of what was really happening in Europe, Poland, Hungary, what was going on, and the Nazis, Yimach Shemam V'Zichrom, were exterminating the Jews, and there were some very noble Jews who knew one thing about Goyim. That never changes. They're always willing to take money. A bribe always goes a very long way. And even though a bribe is usur, it's categorically forbidden to bribe anyone, and by goyim, in times of peace, it is the ultimate chil Hashem to present a bribe to a non-Jew. But pikuach nefesh, it's a very good technique. When they're killing Jews, and you can give a Jew a couple of dollars and let a Jew live, it's a very worthy endeavor. And many of the Gedolei Yisrael would go in Mechallel Shabbos, go in taxis and go from place to place to raise money, basically to bribe the Germans, to give them money to release a couple of Jews, save their lives. And I think it maybe was Aaron Kotler, he came in, if not him, it was someone of his caliber, came into a shul, was going on Shabbos from shul to shul in a taxi on Shabbos. Came into a shul, he made an appeal, a fiery appeal, and the people were all worked up. They were all worked up, and they were ready to give a lot of money. And there was a person there, I don't want to say who it was, who, I'm not even sure I know who it was, but he saw the people were really going to give. But he was afraid, if they give to this cause, they're not going to give to the other cause that they're planning to the other appeal that they're planning to make next week. So, and that's very important. For whatever reason, he felt that need that he had to make an appeal next week for whatever service they were going to provide. He had great hopes that would raise a lot of money. But if the people now are going to be giving a lot of money to save Jewish lives, they're not going to give twice. next week they're not going to give any money. So after this rabbi made this very passionate appeal, he got up and he said, we want to thank the rabbi for his passionate drasha. And after Shabbos, everyone should not forget, every penny counts. Or something like that. He had an expression where people were planning to give big money. And he said, every few cents you give makes a difference. He basically, like, you know, the opening appeal, when you make, they make an appeal, who sets the tone of the appeal? The first one. If the first, the richest man in the shul says, I'm giving $10,000, then the second richest person in the shul says, I'll give $9,000. But if the richest person in the shul says, I'm giving $100, then the second guy gives $75. So the person who followed up the appeal to give big money to save Jewish lives, he had an ayin hara. He had an ayin hara. Why should these Jews here in this synagogue give so much money for this cause? They shouldn't give so much money. They should give less money. Mind your own business. To go and get up and make an announcement and deflate the people in the synagogue, not to give big money, but to give small amounts of money, this is the real Midas Sodom. When you see other people willing to give to a cause and it means something to them, mind your own business. It doesn't affect you. Over here, he claims it affected him. All right, but that's not really a good excuse when it comes to saving Jewish lives. This is a chorban. If you see someone involved in success, and you get and it bothers you, and you do something to prevent that success, this is the real deal of Midas Sodom. These are the three types of chorbanos. Now let's go look at some of the rules of Midas Sodom. We have over here a very important mission. The mission says, Arba Midas, but there are four Midas by a person. They are Shali, Shalachem, Shalachem, Shali. And then there is, okay, there is Shali, what's mine is yours, what's yours is mine. All different Midas, whatever. I'm not going to go through the whole Mishnah. But then there's one Mida, which is a dispute. There are two opinions in the Mishnah. What is the Mida of Shali Shali v'shelach shelach? What's mine is mine, and what's yours is yours. So it says in the Mishnah, Zu Midas Kol Adam. Average. It's fair game. What's so terrible? What's mine is mine, what's yours is yours. If what's yours is mine, and what's mine is mine. That's a Russia. You're a wicked person. You're a ganef. What's yours is mine, but what's mine is mine. What's mine is yours, and yours is mine. That's no good. That's a socialist. That's also no good. No,
that's the Mida of the Russia, that everything is theirs.
The Russia is what's shalcha shali v'shali shali. Right?
Right, that's socialism.
And what's the mida of shalcha shali v'shali shalach? Is there such a mida? I don't even know if there is such a mida. There's a shalach shali v'shali shalach. I don't remember. Then there's the mida shali shali v'shalach shalach. It's the only mida in the Mishnah where we find a dispute between two opinions as to what is this called. So the first Tanakhama of the Mishnah says, Zu Midas Kol Adam, V'yesh Oimrim, Zu Midas Sodom. Why is that so? Why is it so, Shali Shali, what's mine is mine, V'shelecha Shalach? It's very difficult, especially in light of what we just finished saying. So the Mefarshim, they struggle very hard. Many of the Mefarshim on the page tell us a very big chiddush. The essence is, there's nothing wrong. There's really nothing wrong of saying shali shali v'shalach shalach, because
it's private property. Private property.
And that's why Zoom meets, what's the second opinion
that's
that says
one way of looking at it.
So the basic answer, okay, there are two answers which we have to really analyze in depth, but the basic answer that most of the Mefarshim say, it's a slippery slope. There's nothing inherently wrong. But when you live a life of shali shali v'shalach shalach, and you draw that line and you become obsessed with privacy, what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours, and I'm not giving any charity, I'm not giving you anything, I'm not taking from you, this leads, this is a psychological analysis, this attitude, shali shali v'shalach shalach, leads to shalach shali v'shali shali. It's a natural progression. A human being is not a stable creature. A human being by nature, we learned yesterday, v'nasati l'cha mehalichem bein ha'omdim o'eleh. A human being does not stay in one place. This is the human condition forces a person always to move in a direction. That's the way Hashem made human beings. Although it sounds very on paper it sounds very, very logical. Very logical. Shali shali v'shalach shalach. It sounds very good. But you're leaving out. And that's why Zoom midas kol adam. It makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. But along comes the second opinion of the mission that says, you're right. It makes a lot of sense on paper. And that's the natural inclination. And look, we're good people. We're not like the door of Noach. The door of Noach, it was shalach shali v'shali shali. So we're good people. We have a society of shali shali v'shalach shalach. But you know what happens? That attitude is, now I'm telling you the pshat, and then I'm going to tell you the drush, based upon what I just said before. The pasha pshat in all of the vast majority of the rishonim on the page of the Mishnayos will tell you, the human condition is such, you're moving, it will very shortly lead to shelach shali. Okay, you have to go to find a psychologist to explain to you why that is so. But that's what happens. If you live in a world, we see that in America today. If what's mine is mine, and what's yours is yours, I'm jealous. What I have less than what you have. I only have this amount, and you have that. Shali shali v'shalach shalach. If you focus the whole day what you have, and you stagnate, you get jealous. So the next, what happens? I also want what you have. It's going to lead to shelach sheli. It's just one step before. What I just told you is the poshut, most simplest translation, explanation of the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. This week's parsha, we learn about Sodom. Sodom was destroyed. They were wicked people. The Mishnah says there are four midos by a person. There's a midah called shelach, shali, shali, v'shalach, shalach. Tanakhama says, gewaldig, beautiful, you're good to go. V'yeshoimrim, zum midas sedoim. What's the pshat in zum midas sedoim? We have the biggest psychologists entering into the picture, and they're telling us the human condition is such, no one stagnates. Man is always moving somewhere. Staying in this position, although on paper it makes a lot of sense, it's going to lead to shelach sheli. Okay, now.
You can explain it a different way, because Sodom made it a rule.
Oh, okay, you're touching upon what I want to say.
To give to
right.
Because this is yours, don't give it to
exactly.
Anybody else.
So, right.
It's not allowed to give to you.
Right, so that's it. Exactly. So you just said.
Sodom, the chok.
Right, so you just said exactly what I wanted to say. I just finished giving you an introduction.
Right.
There were three chorbonos in this world. And that's it. It's all you got to know about this world. There are three buttons to blow up the world. Shalach, shalach shali. And then there is the button of rebelling against Hashem. And there's the button of the very bizarre midah of Sodom, mind your own business. You don't want to give. No one's bothering you. Don't give one penny to charity. But mind your own business if somebody else is willing to give tzedakah, tzedakah. Mind your own business. And when you make laws, you know, you can't give tzedakah either. Oh, the world's over. Now, let's go back. Shali, shali, vishalach, shalach. We have an insight. This is a state of being, according to, that will lead somewhere. So the Pashtunim tell us, where is it leading? It's leading to shalach, shali. No, I don't want to say that. I want to say is exactly what Rav Kalman said. If you live in a world, shali shali, v'shalach shalach, and one day you wake up and you discover shali shali, but this fellow across the street, he's not following shali shali, for his shali. He's giving some of his shali to Tuloch, to somebody else. You say to yourself, wait a minute. By me, I live in a world, shali shali. Everyone has to be like me. So just like it's shali shali v'shalach shalach, if my neighbor across the street now becomes a generous person where he decides in his mind, shali shalach, he wants to give it away, not to me. He's not going to give it to me. Oh, no, not to me. I'm not a taker. Shali shali. But I see somebody else willing to give to somebody else. It drives me mad. I cannot tolerate another person. I cannot tolerate Reuven giving tzedakah to Shimon. Because I live in a world, shali shali. So if I'm a shali shali, so Reuven also must be a man called shali shali. And if he's going to be a shali to give to someone else, I have to enact legislation to prevent this from happening. Oh, isn't that what Sodom is? Sodom is not stealing. Sodom is not rebelling against Hashem. Sodom is the intolerance of watching other people be generous. None of your business. No one's asking you for a dime. Doesn't bother you. He wants to give tzedakah. Let him give tzedakah. Mind your own business. Where does it come? What's the root? What is the root of how that happens? You know how it happens? Because when you're a selfish person, and you're not willing to give even one penny of tzedakah, it's shali shali, and you do this for years and years and decades, it sinks into your mind that if you're not a person called shali shali, you're a moron. And if you see someone else giving tzedakah to someone else, even though it has absolutely no effect upon you, you go meshuggah. You go, you can't tolerate it. And you can't tolerate it, you start preventing it from happening. Oh, you have really turned into the real Sodom. So the Parsha Pshat, and you look on the page of the Mishnais, they'll tell you, Shali Shali V'Shalach Shalach Zumidas Sodom. They're going to tell you there's nothing really wrong. It's a Chiddush. That's a Chiddush. That's a very big Chiddush. That's not the way I always learned it. And I always said Shali Shali. I thought I learned a little bit different. No, they all say there's nothing wrong. It's really, truly a good Midah. There's nothing wrong with Shali Shali V'Shalach Shalach. The problem is, it's going to take you somewhere because that's the human condition. Where will it take you? So you know what they write on the page? It's going to take you to Shalach Shali. Okay, I get it. But I believe in a more deeper approach, it's not going to lead you to Shalach Shali. It's going to lead you to the Midas of Stone. And the true Midas of Stone is intolerance of another person giving charity. That's the problem. That's where it takes you. The person is always moving, and you're moving. You got to see where the next step is. Now, in this topic, there are a lot of very interesting halachic situations of, we'll just run through some of them very, very quickly, of the rules of Midas Sodom. Many of the poskim tell us there's another term which appears to be a different term, this requires a lot of study of what is the difference between the term Midas Sodom and another term called Zenene Vezelechosa. Okay, that is another term in halacha. You have a term in halacha called when a person has benefit and you suffer no loss. Zenene Vezelechosa. Is Zenene Vezelechosa another way of describing Midas Sodom, or is Midas Sidoim and Zenene Vezele Chosar two completely different things? So based upon what we said now, it's the answer is yes and no. And I'll give you an example. What do those words mean? Zenene, this one benefits, Vezele Chosar. Take that those words and fit that in to what we just explained this last half an hour. There were three sins in the world. What was the third sin? Stomotis Sodom. I cannot tolerate when my friend Reuven gives charity to Shimon. Shimon is the Zenene. He is the Nene. Vizeh lechosar. I, Reuven, I myself, have not suffered from this. That's not the normal way you translate Zenene vizeh lechosar. Zenene vizeh lechosar normally means Reuven and Shimon. We'll come to the classic translation. But let's look at the translation I'm trying to fit into Midas Sodom. What is the true Midas Sodom? According to what we've been saying until now. Reuven is observing. I observe. Reuven give charity to Shimon, and I go out of my mind.
You're saying those are two independent events, not two interdependent events.
What is Midas Sodom we're saying until now? Observe.
What I'm saying, what right.
Well, let's explain. I want to say it's both. It's
good. Those are two independent, unconnected events.
No. This is not me. The poskim right. The mafarshim. Many of them say it's the same thing. It's just two different ways of describing the same midah. But other poskim say no. They're completely two different concepts. Let me try to explain the possibilities in light of what we have just learned. I'll give you an example. Let's take this term called Zenene Vezele Chosar and assume it is exactly the same thing as what we call Midas Sodom. How have we defined Midas Sodom in this last half hour? We have defined it by myself as an observer watching Reuven give charity to Shimon and go crazy. Reuven, you're giving money to Shimon? Are you out of your mind? How dare you give money to Shimon? You can't do that. So take that concept, that's called Midas Sodom, and put that into the words of Zenene Vezeh Lechosar. So we say Zenen, who's being Nene? Shimon. Shimon is receiving charity from Reuven. Is Reuven losing? He certainly is. Reuven gave him $1,000. Reuven has a big hole in his pocket now. Reuven's a big loser. He gave charity. He wanted to give the charity. So Reuven is a loser. He's chosar. So what does it mean, loy chosar? I is loy chosar. Zenene, Shimon. Shimon is the one who is deriving benefit because Reuven is a tzaddik and Reuven wants to do chesed. He wants to help his friend Shimon. So Reuven gives him money. He helps him. He gives him charity. Shimon is the Nene. Reuven is Chosar. But I, who's sitting on my porch and watching this event happen, I'm Loi Chosar. It didn't cost me a dime. I'm just watching a movie. I'm watching Reuven give to Shimon. Shimon is the Nene. No one asked me. No one bothered me. I'm just watching, and I'm going out of my mind. Reuven, are you crazy? You're giving money to Shimon for free? Are you out of your mind? I have to go enact legislation that this cannot go on. Excuse me, why don't you mind your own business? Lechosar, what's it to you? What have you lost? Who bothers you? So if you accept the principle that the Midas Sodom is the term Midas Sodom and the term Zenene Vezeh Lechosar are exactly the same, which many poskim assume is, we want to accept that based upon the translation of Midas Sodom, based on what we've learned today, how do you explain that? The answer is, define who is the Nene and define who's the Leichosar. The Nene is Shimon. The one that's Leichosar is me. What's your problem? Why are you making a scene? Why are you going crazy about this? This is Midas Sidom. However, there's another approach. Other places.
Look at the word Sidom. Samech, Sagur. Mem, Sagur. And in the middle, there is a do. Shnaim, how do you say? No, Sheli, Sheli, Shelach, Shelach. Sagur. I'm closed.
Closed, okay. Now, on the other hand, other opinions hold they're completely two different concepts. They're completely different concepts. Zenene v'zelechosar means, Zenene means, Ruvain is having pleasure. And I, lechosar, I am not losing from Ruvain's hana, even though the hana is coming from me. In other words, I am the source of his pleasure. In other words, for example, I own an apartment. I own an apartment, and Shimon is a squatter. Okay, I own an apartment. I'll call Reuven. Reuven is a squatter. Reuven is a squatter. And so, it's not so simple. The case are not so simple, but let's just in a very general way. Shimon is not paying any rent. Shimon is living in my apartment rent free. My apartment is not up for rent. No one rents it. I never advertised that it should be rented. And the way Shimon lives in the apartment, he causes absolutely zero damage. There is zero wear and tear. There is zero deterioration. And it already happened in the past. And it's only a question now I should come and go demand back pay. You have to construct the case. The bottom line is Shimon has derived, because of me, enormous benefit. But I didn't suffer a loss. I did not suffer one penny of loss because of Shimon's pleasure. That has nothing to do with Midas Sidom, the way we explain Midas Sidom. Midas Sidom is purely an attitude problem. It's more than an attitude. You go further, you enact loss. Midas Sidom is where I observe other people doing kind deeds and I go crazy. I don't like people doing kindness to one another. But there's another principle called Zenen v'zelechosar, where there's a beneficiary, and his benefit has come straight from my pocket, out of my hand. But I would never have been able in this situation to gain one penny from this, not in any shape or form. But I cannot tolerate that another person took advantage of me. So then there's a principle, which is a very complicated principle. I thought we had more time. We're not going to have time. We're out of time. We have a more complicated principle of no. In such a situation where your friend has benefit directly because of you, but you have not lost one iota from this situation, then you have no right to demand payment. You have no right to open up your mouth. That's not the same thing as Midas Sidom. Because in Midas Sidom, you don't even have that. In Midas Sidom, the source of pleasure of Shimon has literally nothing to do with you. It's more of an attitude. How could we tolerate such a thing in society? Zenene v'zelei chosar is where the one that is deriving pleasure has derived pleasure directly because of me. I'm the source of his pleasure. It's just that I couldn't charge in the market. There was nothing I can possibly do in the market, in the economy, to gain out of this pleasure that he had of $1, one penny. And I didn't lose any money from it either. So then we say to you, sir, stand down. Zenene v'zelei chosar. Nu, stand down. Leave him alone. Go home. Too bad for you. That's not Midas Sidom. Midas Sidom is where it's even worse. Midas Sidom is the source of his pleasure has nothing to do with you. Nothing to do with you. Zero. It's just a wicked attitude of not allowing people in this world to do chesed with somebody else for crazy reasons. because if that's how you want to impose your value system on the world, my value system is shali shali, so everyone in the world has to be a shali shali. And if someone goes and he becomes a shali shalach, oh, so he's ruffling my feathers. That's midas sodom. But zenenev zelechosar, no, zenenev zelechosar. That's a different principle. Okay, so this is the basic yisoidos of zenenev zelechosar. We have to review in this topic. We discussed the three different churbanos in the world, and then we discussed the Mishnah Pirkei Avos that tells us shali shali v'shalach shalach zumidas kol adam. It's fine. What's the pshat? The slippery slope. What's the slippery slope? The pshat, the symbol is, it's going to lead to shalach shali. But on a deeper level, I want to suggest it's not going to lead to shalach shali. It's going to lead to, just like I am a shali shali, you also must be a shali shali. And when you start giving charity, I can tolerate that. That's the true Midas Sodom. And the human condition is such that it's always going forward. And that's where it's going to lead. And then we discussed the principle of Zenenev Zeloi Chosar. Is this identical to Midas Sodom? Well, it depends. If you say that it is, then that forces us to translate Zenenev Zeloi Chosar to mean Zenene. Shimon is the recipient of Reuven's Sedaka. Reuven was a Chosar. But I'm not a Chosar. Mind your own business. And if you want to say that's not the same principle, then it's a whole different concept, where Shimon is a squatter living on my property, and I anyway would not be able to gain any money from this situation in any way whatsoever, and I have no right to charge him, or at least I have no right in the past to charge him, because that's called Zenene. He was Nene because of me, V'lochasar. I did not lose anything. Okay, that concludes this sugya. Now, before we sign off today, I want to ask you a question. I want to hear your opinion, Michal's opinion, and I want to hear especially Safta's opinion, Baruch Horowitz's opinion on this matter, and Mayor's opinion. Yesterday, in the news, it was reported something which disturbed me to no end. To no end, it was, and I didn't believe it when I heard it, and I Googled it, and it is absolutely true, and I challenge you to Google it and to find out all the details of this information. The CDC announced that if you are yesterday, November 3rd, if you are positive for corona, you've gone and you've taken a test, you've taken a real test, and the results have come back from the laboratory, the best laboratory in the world, you are 100% positive. It's okay. You can walk out of your home, you can go to the polling station, to the election, to the booth, and come in contact with the people on the line and with the security personnel and with the person who's going to go and ask you, where do you live? And then to the next person who's going to go have you sign your name and bend down and breathe on them and sign your name and look everything up. And then follow all the instructions and go to the place to go fill out your information, come in contact with another person, and then go into the, give it to the person who's going to put it to the machine, and then walk out and socialize with all of your friends. And in the process, maybe you'll kill about 50 people who will in turn go kill another 50 people. It's okay. It's okay. That's what they wrote on their website. Now, I understand something. In the last couple of months,
most of that was your own interpretation.
Oh, really? The last couple of months, I don't know one rabbi, even the most liberal of liberal rabbis.
In other words, the consequences that you just mentioned, that was...
Well, let me just compare.
You didn't actually read that.
Right, exactly.
Interpolate.
Go look what it says there on their website. Now, in the last 6 months, I don't know of one rabbi, even the most liberal of liberal rabbis, who will tell you that this whole thing is a hoax and it's a conspiracy and have never put on a mask even once in their life, and I've never closed their shuls. I don't even know of one rabbi in the whole world that would say to a Baal HaBos who comes, Rabbi, guess what? I'm positive. Look at the laboratory. I'm mamish positive. Can I come daven in shul? I'll wear a mask. I'll wear gloves. Can I come daven in shul? I don't even know of one rabbi that would allow him to come daven in the shul. I don't know one priest. I don't know one store owner. I don't know one normal person, not just in the United States of America, but in the entire world, in every single country in the world, that would let a person who is 100% confirmed positive to leave his isolation because of the danger. And yesterday, the CDC said it's permitted. Why would they say such a thing? I mean, I don't know. My interpretation is one simple thing. Because the likelihood that a person that has corona will vote for Joe Biden is very, very high. And when it comes to politics, there's a different standard, a different set of rules. Now, I hope someone's going to make me sane. In my eyes, when I read this and I saw all this, I said to myself, when this whole thing started, you know, I was a very big believer in government. I really was. I'm the type of the real lemchel. Whatever they tell you to do, you do. I'm the real lemchel. And over 6 months, I became a little more skeptical here and there. But this was the icing on the cake. And I lost any mashu of respect for the CDC and the government, if they're not embarrassed, ashamed, to publicly put this information on the website. Now, I hope someone here is going to correct me that I'm totally wrong about this. And Michal, what do you say?
I heard something about this, but of course they didn't say go and kill 50 people, as you suggested. We know that the CDC has gone back and forth and back and forth throughout this time. And by the way, you didn't mention masks. Presumably, one goes to a polling place.
With a mask, of course. With a mask. So what? Right. With a mask. We all know that when we wear a mask the whole day in all these public places, we all know, it doesn't always...
Public, you know, most of the time you're in line outdoors if
and the social distancing, indoors.
Outdoors is,
the whole country.
All right. But
the whole
again,
country.
It's mutter to protest, isn't it? With masked or unmasked, in Antifa's case.
No. The protesting is where you don't know. All the times that you're allowed to go to all these events.
Looters are permitted.
You don't know. No.
Congregate.
You're permitted to congregate if you don't know that you're positive. All the permission is all, everything that you can do. If you don't know, what you don't know is good for you. If I feel fine and I don't know that I have it, so you can go. You can go with a mask, without a mask, this, that. But I'm talking about where you have come back from the doctor with a certificate that says you have corona. You are 100% positive for corona. And to tell me that you're allowed to go, put on a mask, and go out and vote publicly and come in contact with people? I don't understand this. Would a rabbi, if you were a rabbi...
Offer a rationale for that?
They don't... Well, rationale is obvious. The likelihood that a person who has corona will vote for Biden is very, very high. That's the rationale. What else is the rationale? The whole issue of how to deflate, to ruin...
You realize that the fatality rate is infinitesimal, right?
I don't understand. One person that has it, if you're tested positive, just ask any rabbi, ask the most liberal...
I'm not going to pretend to understand
that part. Ask any liberal rabbi in this country, if you have a congregant... I'm talking about a rabbi that knows there are a lot of shuls here where no one wears masks. Okay, they don't even know what a mask is. There are a lot of shuls. Go
That's
ask
how you
all.
Find a liberal?
Go in this context. Go ask all the rabbis in Borough Park. Ask them. They don't even know what a mask is in Lakewood. Ask them. If one of your congregants tells you he has corona, will you let him come into shul? I don't believe for one moment anyone who has a head on their shoulders will tell them, if you have corona, don't come. Don't you dare come. You'll kill everyone here. If you don't know that you have it and you feel fine, if you don't know and you then their opinion, come, don't wear a mask, do whatever. But if you are telling me that you were tested positive and you have corona, don't you dare step foot in this facility, even with a mask. You're a deadly person. You're a deadly person. You're a rotzeach.
But most people don't fit into that category, right?
The CDC said, if you are tested...
But most people...
What do you mean?
...aren't walking around having tested positive. It's not that common, right?
That's right. That's not common at all. Zero. But the CDC on their website says if you have been tested positive, you are permitted to leave your home, to leave your quarantine, to go and vote. Go to the web. I'm not making this up.
I read a headline that said so.
You are 100% positive. We're not talking about doubt. You are currently positive. You are contagious. You can go vote. When you go vote, we're talking about the whole country. Okay, where I voted yesterday in East Midwood, there wasn't such great social distancing. Don't tell me there was such.
Was there a line?
No, there was no line, but I came within 6 feet of another person at least 50 times yesterday with my mask on. And probably, I'm assuming that every so often my mask fell below my nose for maybe a second or two here and there. Okay.
How are you feeling today?
I'll tell you later. Okay? So, and I, Baruch Hashem yesterday, I felt fine. I wasn't tested within the last 2 weeks. So I'm assuming, but let's say I was tested positive, I wouldn't go vote. Because I would feel I'm a Rotzeach.
We're still here, I'm amazed.
Okay, so this shattered, in my mind, everything I ever believed in government. I hope someone will save me for myself. Safta, Baruch Horowitz, what do you say about this?
I have to digest it. I didn't hear about it.
Go to the website. Don't trust me. Go
to
the website.
I trust you.
Ramey, are you there? Mayor, what do you say? All right, Rabbi. Yes.
Rabbi?
Yes.
I heard that the people who were tested positive were allowed to come if they came in cars.
It's not what it says on their website. It says, let me go right now on Google. Let's type in CDC. Voting positive corona. Enter. Corona, Washington Post. Corona update. CDC says people who test positive for the virus can still vote in person. Washington Post. Voters who have not, let's go to their website. Let's go to the website. I mean, this is like unbelievable. This is just shocking. In Israel, if you walk out of your house when you're in quarantine, which means you're a suffix, you're not a vadai, you're a suffix, they'll arrest you. They'll give you a fine. If you're an American, they'll put you on a plane, you'll be out of the country in 5 minutes. And here, you're not a suffix, you're a vadai. And you can go into any polling booth in the whole country. And most polling stations, they're not so careful. Okay, I'm an eyewitness yesterday. Don't tell me where I went. It was very Hamish. I went yesterday. They weren't, it wasn't much different than what goes on in Shul where I went yesterday. It's unbelievable. What's going on? What kind of government we have here? This is the corruption.
So you regret having voted in person?
I don't regret nothing. I don't regret anything. But I'm saying, like,
the CDC, they're supposed to be infallible.
They're not. This is outright fraud. This is outright.
Fauci?
This is outrageous. This is outrageous. What they've done to society, and they're telling you, but you can still vote. If one person has corona, they can spread. You know how deadly it is to spread. And when you spread for one person, they're telling you to go vote with corona? It's impossible. All right, by side, Tzoruch Iyun Godl Ad Ma'oy, check into the facts. And you'll report back.
What I wanted to say earlier was, about Midas Sodom.
Yes.
Bush advocated for something called compassionate conservatism, right? Which is a respect for private property, and at the same time recognizing the need to help the needy. Right?
Okay.
So that's that kind of that kind of flexibility that Saddam did not have. I'm saying that's the cure. That's the cure for Midas Saddam, is to find that happy medium that respects private property and is also
compassionate,
voluntarily generous.
So basically what the Mishnah is basically saying is that you have this private property, but you have to give in order to prevent yourself from sinking into the midah of Sodom by not tolerating other people give, is if you also give a little bit. If you give a small amount.
Yeah, I understand. I understand this intolerance, this institutionalized selfishness. I understand that. My Rebbe said that Saddam could not survive because Hashem could not tolerate a dynasty of rishus. That's what he called it.
All right, Rabbi Sai, okay. To be continued.
All right, let's see if anything breaks.
All right, we'll see what happens.
Already.
What I haven't found is, anybody know how many votes total were cast for president? I haven't seen that number anywhere.
They say approximately about 150, 160.
150. So 100 early voting and about 50 or so yesterday.
Approximately.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But you have to find out who the printer is in Philadelphia. There was a printer working hard at night last night.
Mm-hmm.
They stole the election in Philadelphia.
It's not. Oh, yeah. There are votes not only in Philadelphia.
But it's mainly there because most of the country, the mail-in ballots were counted first, not last.
Depending on when they're received.
They can't steal it until they know how many votes they need to steal.
Yeah.
They have to figure out what they need, and then they start printing.
They saw already yesterday, Trump was ahead by 700,000 votes in Pennsylvania.
That's correct.
I haven't, I was by the share, I checked it, but before the share, it was down to about 400,000.
I don't know.
And even if he wins Pennsylvania, he cannot get 270. He can only get 268. That's all. He's only up to 268.
Who?
Trump.
Well, that's cannot is a strong word because it's not a sure thing. There, you know, presumably he's going to win Georgia too.
I'm talking about Georgia. If he gets Georgia, Carolina, and Pennsylvania, he only has 268.
We'll see. Well, they want to steal Wisconsin. That we know.
They already did.
So we'll see. We'll see. Meanwhile, the Senate seems to have held.
Senate held, and they even gained.
And that's very important, which I just wrote about.
And they even gained some congressional seats.
And not all of the gains have been registered as yet. So far, 5, but I think there are more. And thank God Lee Zeldin had a big win.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, Rabbi Sai, have a good day.
Rabbi Levine?
Yes, yes.
Mark Hirschowitz, good
yes,
afternoon.
Yes, yes, yes.
How
are you? Baruch Hashem, how are you doing?
You know, when you told the joke this morning about the fellow in the Santa Claus outfit,
yeah,
and the Hasidic guy standing together collecting money,
yeah.
We were in London. My wife and I were in London many years ago on vacation. My father had a first cousin. We went to visit them on Shabbos, and they were very...